awkward in this ridiculous dress. My right shoulder still stiff from where it bashed into the carriage wall earlier. The chamber is deafeningly quiet. The silence seems to spool around me, cat-like, coaxing my nerves. I walk forward, trying to mimic Mistress Iara's light way of moving, but my steps are heavy. Like in the carriage, the whole situation has a dreamlike tint to it, and my heart surges with the hopeless desire for that to be all this is. I've learned how to live with nightmares. I could cope with one more. Though I keep my eyes firmly tracked on the stairs I'm making my way down, it's all I can do not to trip over this ridiculous dress, I sense the eyes of the crowd following me. Darja. The word bounds into my head. Is that what I am? Is that what the demons see? A girl who is a traitor to her own people? When I reach the bottom of the steps, I let out a relieved puff of air, just as I take my first step into the pool and stand on the hem of my dress. The crowd gasps as I lurch forward. My arms fling out inelegantly, and I grimace as I hit the surface of the water with a smack. It's cold, a fist of ice. At first, I expect to choke, but the water is like viscous air, and I wrestle my panic down, regaining my composure. Or at least whatever passes for composure when you've lost all traces of dignity. I scramble up and stride on, the dark liquid of the enchanted pool flowing around me like smoke. I do my best at getting out the other side somewhat gracefully. When I climb onto the podium, I drop to my knees at the king's feet without daring to look at him.
I am honored to serve you, Heavenly Master,
I recite into the shocked silence. More silence. And then the room erupts with the king's laughter. Look at the poor thing, he cries, his sonorous voice echoing off the cavernous walls. Dressed like a queen when she cannot even walk a straight line. How much liquor did you ply her with to calm her nerves, Madam Himura? He jokes and the crowd joins in, the hall reverberating with demon laughter as a servant darts forward to hurry me on, and I stumble away, face burning. 11. Mariko almost threw up on his feet. But she didn't. I think Jen bowed wrong. It looked funny from where I was anyway. Aoki, I fell flat on my face, in front of the entire court. She sighs.
You're right,
she admits. It was a complete disaster. I break a smile, and she nudges me with her shoulder, green eyes glittering. It's early the next morning. The two of us are sitting on the steps to the bathing courtyard, wrapped in gray light and pre-dawn hush. The calm is at odds with the busyness of the house yesterday, and I'm glad for this moment with Aoki before the day, our first as official paper girls, begins. Last night, all I wanted to do was curl up in a ball of embarrassment after my display at the ceremony, not just because of how humiliating it was, falling over in front of the whole court, but because of how it made me look to the king. Before last night, I thought I didn't care what he'd think of me. And then he laughed at me. Laughed like I was a joke. And I want him, need him, to know that I am not. To know that I am strong. To know that whatever happens, whatever the official position says, I do not belong to him. But as soon as we got back to Paper House, Madam Himura rounded on me, so incensed she could barely get a word out.
You didn't just shame yourself. You shamed us. You shamed me,
she had cried before sending me to my room. Lil, hurrying behind her, her cheeks as red as mine, maybe it was actually a blessing in disguise. I say now to Aoki. I sit straighter, scraping back the hair from my brow. Now he definitely won't call me first. Maybe he'll never call me at all. She tilts to the side so she can look at me.
You don't want him to?
No. I say it a little too forcefully, and I steal a glance over my shoulder, as though Madame Himura could have snuck up behind us. Voice lowered, I ask.
Do you?
Of course, she answers, also a little too hard. She takes a breath, then goes on. I mean, I'm not sure. I think so. He's the king, Lei. It's a privilege. And this part at least sounds like she believes it. But even so, I press, is this really what you want? What you hoped for of your life? Aoki twines her fingers in her lap, her teeth softly working her bottom lip. I miss my family so much. I really do. But if I hadn't been chosen, I would have been stuck in our tiny village for the rest of my life. Maybe I would have been happy there. But look at this, Lei, she says, sweeping her arm at the empty courtyard. And I know she means not just here, but the house, the palace, the beauty and extravagance of it all. Unmoved, I mutter, I'd rather be back in Cienzo. Even though your family is taken care of now? I open my mouth to retort, stopping myself at the last moment. Aoki's from a poor village, too. She has also known hunger and struggle, experienced the fierce bite of the cold and the heavy ache of exhaustion after a long day's work, so deep you feel it in your bones. Even so, I was meant to take care of them, my father and Tien, me, not the king. Darja. His money is dirty, blood money. I wonder who he'll pick first, Aoki murmurs a few moments later. Her question hangs coiled between us. I flash her a sideways smirk. I bet it's Blue. She groans. Oh, gods, no. We'd never hear the end of it. As we both snort, a maid hurries into the courtyard from the opposite side, hair still mussed from sleep and her nightrobe tied messily. She drops to the floor as soon as she spots us.
So sorry, mistresses, she stammers. I didn't know you would be up.
Oh, don't worry, I start getting to my feet, but she darts off before I can finish. I turn to Aoki. I'm not sure I'll ever get used to that. Mistresses? It sounds so old, formal, she giggles. I know. I guess that's something else the other girls are used to. They were probably called mistress since babies. She puts on a posh accent, fluting her wrist fancily. Mistress Blue, would you care for some honey in your mother's breast milk? We burst into laughter, stopping at the sound of voices from inside the house. We'd better go, I admit, grudgingly. It's almost time to get ready. We walk back to our rooms in silence, and slowly, the significance of her earlier question settles onto our shoulders, gaining a little more weight with each step. After my performance last night, I'm sure the king won't choose me first. But still, I pray silently with every fiber of my being that I'm right. Paper girl life, it transpires, consists of a lot of studying, something my old life in Cienzo had barely any of. Mistress Iara warned us we would have a busy schedule of lessons to develop our new skills, ranging from etiquette classes, to calligraphy, to music practice, to Ikaran history, but I didn't realize how tiring it would be. Maybe it's because I never went to school. I was helping my parents with the shop from pretty much the moment I could walk. and as one of my only teachers, Tian would be the first to complain about my attention span.
"The problem, little nuisance," she'd say, "is that you have none."
By the time we head back to Paper House for lunch, my head is stuffed with 4 hours' worth of information from our morning classes. Most of the other girls are busy chatting, but I'm dazed, going over everything our teachers said, hoping to somehow imprint it all into my brain through sheer will. I'm still so focused that when we take our seats around Madame Himura's table and she says something that causes the other girls to become quiet, it takes me a few moments to register what is happening. The king has made his first choice.
"Who is it?"
Blue speaks up immediately, adding a quick, "Madame Himura," at the eagle woman's piercing look. I glance at Aoki, but she's focused hard on Madame Himura, her mouth pressed small. Then my eyes flick to Ren. Unlike the others, she doesn't seem to be paying much attention to what's going on. She looks younger than she did last night, when she'd been glossed with makeup and wrapped in that dress. But there's still a stoic quality to the way she is poised, chin lifted, eyes cast away. Suddenly, I'm certain that it will be her name Madame Himura will announce. The way she looked last night. How could it not be?
"The name of the king's chosen girl will be delivered by royal messenger on the days he requests company that evening," Madame Himura explains into the expectant hush. "It goes without saying that if it is you who is summoned, you must obey his call."
With a rustle of feathers, she unwraps a silk-bound package and slides its contents, a small bamboo chip, into the center of the table with one curving talon. Then, the room in absolute silence now, she moves her hand away to reveal the name printed across it. Chenna Ji. The calligraphy ink is red like a splatter of blood. Relief clangs through me, so strongly I instinctively brace as if it were audible. But all the girls are looking at Chenna, even Ren. Her eyes are lit with something unexpected and sharp, though not at all like the jealousy or relief playing in the other girls' gazes. It's more steely, challenging almost. Chenna herself doesn't react, or at least not visibly. Her expression is calm, her posture straight-backed, the image of perfect paper girl, and she keeps her eyes trained on the chip.
"Congratulations, Chenna," Madame Himura croaks into the quiet.
She glares pointedly around at us.
"Congratulations, Chenna," Ren echoes smoothly.
Yes, congratulations,
Aoki stammers with a faltering smile. The rest of us follow suit until it's only Blue left. Her mouth is set, but she manages a quick curve of her lips.
"Yes, well done, Chenna," she says quickly.
Then she taps her empty bowl and snaps, "Well, is lunch going to come anytime soon?" Earning a scolding from Madame Himura that she seems almost grateful to receive. The rest of the meal passes in near silence. There's a stiffness to the girls' interactions, everyone's eyes frequently sliding back to Chenna, and even I find myself watching her, trying to see through her serene exterior. But she keeps her face calm, a glaze over her eyes as she focuses on her food, eating slowly but steadily.
"Chenna," Madame Himura orders when it's time for us to leave for our afternoon lessons, "you stay with me."
And that's when I see it. For the first time since her name was revealed on the bamboo chip, a tremor runs through her hands. She turns her cheek as we file out of the room, making a strange, fleeting gesture with her fingertips across her brow that perhaps could be something religious,
or could also just be her brushing aside a stray hair, before one of the maids closes the door behind us. Even though I can sense they want to discuss what just happened, the girls manage to keep from talking as we trail down the corridor. But as soon as we turn the corner, Blue speaks up. That was a surprise. A few of the girls make noncommittal murmurs, though I hate to admit it. I can tell most of the girls agree with her. Still, I bristle at the way she puts it. I wonder what his reasoning was, Mariko says with a purse of her lips. She shifts, hips jutting to one side. Jenna is beautiful enough, I suppose, and her family is somewhat prestigious, at least for Jana. Maybe that's it, Jen, one of the twins, offers. He wanted to connect with a part of his heritage. Blue scowls at her.
What part? Desert slum?
I just mean, Jen continues, though her cheeks are pink now, that Jana is where the original was from, and is now where half the rebel nomads are hiding, Blue interrupts. Or at least according to the rumors. I doubt that's something the king wants to align himself with. Jen lifts a shoulder. Maybe he's trying to send a message to them then. Or maybe, her sister, Jin, speaks up with a cool glance at Blue. Politics has nothing to do with it. He could just be picking the girl he was most attracted to. I agree, I reply. Chenna is beautiful, and she seems smart and interesting. No wonder the king liked her. The twins nod, smiling at me, and I see Ren look my way, something curious in her warm brown irises. Beside me, Aoki is silent. Blue and Mariko swap smug looks, but if they want to throw an insult my way, they manage to refrain. Anyway, Blue says in a crisp tone that makes it clear we are done with this discussion. The first few choices are just based on his initial impressions of us. I'm more interested to see who he continues to pick. Her eyes slide to me. And who he doesn't choose at all.
12. I'm still blurry from sleep when I'm woken the next morning by the slide of doors, the patter of bare feet in the hall outside, and then muffled voices, excitement barely constrained by whispers. With a yawn, I untangle from my sheets and pad out blearily into the corridor, arms folded across my waist.
What was he like? Did he tell you any secrets about the court?
One of the maids told me his bedchamber is completely covered in moonstones. Is it true?
Chenna's room is at the opposite end of the hall, and though I can't see her past the backs of Jen, Jin, Mariko, and Aoki crowding in her doorway, I assume she's somewhere inside. Sure enough, her voice floats out a second later. I don't want to talk about it. I roll my neck as I amble over, easing out the crick from sleeping. Ren's door is shut, and so is Blue's, but as I step in front of her room, there's a movement behind the rice paper screen, and I notice the very blue-shaped shadow bunched at the edge of the door. I push down the urge to call her out, instead turning to where the other girls are clustered in the doorway across the hall. Jen and Jin greet me as I join them, but Aoki and Mariko don't look away from Chenna.
Just a few details,
Mariko presses, leaning in, the shoulder of her robe slinking down her arm. She flips it back up distractedly.
We'll find out for ourselves soon enough.
Exactly, Chenna says. Her face is tight, a slight flush of color darkening the apples of her cheeks. But apart from that, she looks just as she did the day before, unruffled, the picture of composure. So you don't have long to wait. Mariko pouts at this, but the twins nod.
We're sorry, Jin says. You don't have to tell us anything if you don't want to.
But if you do need to talk, Jen says, we're here. With a kind smile, the twins return to their rooms with their arms linked, heads close. As Mariko huffs and moves away, I slip in beside Aoki. She blinks, barely registering me.
Oh, hi, Lei.
Her eyes click back to Chenna. Well, thanks anyway, she mumbles before heading off.
Lei,
Chenna greets me unsmilingly. I suppose you have 100 questions, too. Actually, just one. I drop my voice. How do you feel? I hope you're all right. Chenna blinks at me. Then she smiles, though it's stiff. I'm just fine. Thank you for asking. Her eyes glide past my shoulder as the door behind me opens. I brace myself for the cutting remark that's surely about to come, but instead, Blue's voice floats out calmly and politely. Good morning, Chenna. 9. I lift a brow, glancing round to see Blue slink down the corridor, her long azure hair swishing. Wow, Chenna says once she's gone. She's really annoyed. I give her a wry smile. She was so sure she was going to be picked first. A frown puckers Chenna's forehead. You know, I thought so too, what with her father's position in the court. But when I asked the king why he chose me, he said it was because of some dream he had the night before. He'd been in Janna, flying over the southern deserts. He thought it was a sign from the heavenly rulers that they wanted him to select me. Maybe I can bribe a shaman to keep his dreams out of Cienzo, I murmur. As she goes to shut the door, Chenna adds, eyes not quite meeting mine. Or all of Ikara, for that matter. As the days sift past, my life dissolves into a blur of routine and ritual. It surprises me how quickly I fall into the palace's rhythms, the shape of my world before coming here erased, as though by water on ink, and replaced with a new life of lessons and gossip, banquets and ceremonies, rules and rituals. I don't forget about wanting to find out what happened to my mother, but I'm so busy I don't get the chance. I also know that kind of thing won't go unnoticed, and General Yu's threat is still fresh in my mind. You are going to try and you are going to succeed. Or else your family, what pitiful part that's left of it, will be punished. Make no mistake, Kira. Their blood will be here. Do you understand me? On your hands. Any time I have the urge to give up or defy Madame Himura's orders, the general's cool voice slinks back into my ears, and I know the only option is to keep going. At least, for now. Each day as a paper girl begins with the morning gong. The maids will have woken earlier to ready the braziers and bathing barrels and light incense, their smoky sweet scent always in the air. Lil takes me to the bathing courtyard to wash before dressing me in simple cotton robes, my hair swept back into a tight bun on the top of my head. Once we're ready, we have breakfast, usually rice balls, pickled vegetables and salted fish, and delicate cuts of fresh fruit, peaches, papaya, honey apple, winter melon, before heading to our first lesson of the day. After my embarrassing performance at the unveiling ceremony, most of the teachers don't seem to expect much of me. One of them, especially, takes an instant disliking. Mistress Tunga is a broad-hipped woman with wide-set eyes who leads our lessons in movement, covering everything from how to walk elegantly to the proper way to kneel in robes. She often singles me out as an example of how not to do things. She'll have me pace the length of the room in front of the other girls, a practice block held between my knees, while she points out every mistake. No, no, walk taller, Leiji. Remember what I said last week? Imagine a thread running from the base of your feet to the top of your head. Now, lean back just so, and let your hips jut out the tiniest amount.
Not like that. You look as though you're about to keel over from too much sake. After what happened at the unveiling ceremony, that's the last thing you want others to think of you. All right, settle down, girls. Sniggering isn't becoming.
Just as bad are our dance classes. They're taught by Madame Chu, a dignified old swan-form demon, the pearly feathers flowing over her slender body tinged with gray. She flits around us, feathers rustling as she sets us into place. This isn't dancing the way I saw it done back home, all abandon and laughter and loose limbs. This is a kind of clockwork, technical thing. Every flute of the wrist, every curve and bend of a limb is measured, or not, as it often applies to me. After our morning classes, we return to Paper House for lunch, either with Mistress Iara or Madame Himura, to update them on our progress. If the king desires the company of one of the girls, this is usually when we're notified, and that girl is taken away for preparations. For the rest of us, it's back for more lessons until sunset. By then, I'm desperate for sleep, but our nights are just as busy. There are banquets with court officials, trips to plays and dance recitals, ceremonies to attend. By the time we finally return to our rooms, it's often past midnight. Despite our tiredness, Aoki and I usually stay up for a while, sipping tea and snacking on pineapple tarts Lil sneaks us from the kitchens. In these stolen moments, all the stress of our lessons, of being away from our families and having to adjust to this new way of life, melts away, and I go to sleep afterward with a smile on my lips and warmth in my chest that feels a lot like happiness. And yet, as the days go by without my name appearing on the bamboo chip, an uncomfortable notion starts to grow inside me, that it never will. And while part of me, most of me, is relieved, there is also shame, and the bright, cruel sear of failure. Even though Aoki still hasn't been chosen either, it's me Madame Himura scolds. Every day she reminds me of my failure. You'd better find a way to show him those heaven's-blessed eyes of yours soon, before I throw you out like the waste of space you've so far proven to be. Once, I dream of the unveiling ceremony, but when I stagger out of the enchanted pool, it's General Yu who gazes down at me from the king's throne, a half-smile twisting his face. Look what you've done. He holds up his arms. From his hands, my father's and Tien's severed heads hang, blood dripping to the floor. Catch, he calls, and throws them to me. I wake up, a scream dying on my lips. There's nothing more I'd like to do than try to escape, to go back home. But every time I consider it, the general's threat comes back to me, along with the sound of the guard's club coming down onto the servant woman's head on the bridge outside royal court. And I remember that if I fail, I might not even have a home to return to. After a month at the palace, I've barely improved in any of our lessons. When my attempt at the fan dance Madame Chu is teaching us ends with my fan flinging from my grip after I shake it too vigorously, and hitting her between the eyes, which unfortunately she couldn't see the funny side of, she keeps me behind after class. But lunch, I start hopelessly. She flutters a winged arm. Don't you have a banquet tonight? You can miss one little meal. Then, raising her voice, she calls, You too, Renji. Ren pauses in the doorway, the other girls filing out past her. Madame Chu? She asks, turning. Practice with Lei Ji. Maybe she'll pick something up from you. Then the swan woman strides out the door, her feathers ruffling. Well, I say into the silence, at least we've got a blue-free hour. Ren doesn't laugh, but when she approaches me, her expression is a little softer than usual. So, what are you having trouble with?
All of it?
She arches a brow.
Helpful.
I sigh. I don't know. It's just so precise. I can't control my body the way you can.
That's what it looks like when I dance,
she says, a wrinkle creasing the tip of her nose.
Controlled?
I'm surprised. There's hurt in her voice.
No,
I say quickly, opening my palms. That's the point. You're in control, but it's like you're not.
Natural, that's what I mean. It seems so natural to you.
It's true. I've watched Ren in our classes, and though she excels in all our lessons, dancing is where she comes alive. There's an effortlessness about the way she moves that reminds me of the bird form demons I used to watch flying over the mountains beyond our village. She is graceful, free. When she dances, she loses her usual haughty, absent look. Something gentle taking over her features and sending a warm new sensation through me that I can't quite place.
Ren collects a fan from the cabinet at the side of the room and flicks it open.
All right. Let's start with something simple. Her posture loosens, a slight bend in the knees, a tilt to her hips. Closing her eyes, she holds both arms to one side. She pauses here, and her stillness is as purposeful as movement. A shaft of muffled light filters in through the rice paper walls of the rehearsal room, casting her outline in an amber glow, and my eyes trace the high arches of her cheekbones, limned in gold. As graceful as all the times I've watched her before, she draws the fan across her chest, rippling it like a wave. Then she opens her eyes.
Your turn.
That simple? I grumble as she hands the fan to me, our fingers brushing.
Just try it.
But I've barely gotten into position when Ren stops me.
Not like that. You're too forceful with your movements.
You have to move more lightly. See? Her eyes travel over my body down to my feet. Even the way you're standing is wrong. A ripple of irritation runs through me. I didn't realize standing was on the list of paper girl requirements, I retort. I thought the king is more interested in the lying down kind of activities.
Her lips purse.
You don't need to say it like that.
It's true though, isn't it? What's the point of all this? All these stupid lessons? There's only one thing we're really here to do.
And I haven't even been wanted for that. The thought squirms into my head before I can stop it.
You have to think about the future, Ren says, frowning at me.
After this year, you'll still have some role to play in the court.
What do you want to do? Who do you want to be?
Not a dancer, that's for sure.
That earns a half smile from her.
Come on, at least try. You might be better at it than you know if you just focus. And you'll never get better if you don't give yourself a chance.
I open my mouth to argue, but catch myself. Because she's right. I haven't been giving it my all. Even though I've fallen into the routine of palace life, my heart isn't in it.
How can it be? It's still back in Cienzo, with my father and Tien, and a life I wish every day was still mine.
Oh, fine, I mutter, glowering. Tears are pricking my eyes now. And the last thing I want is to cry in front of Ren. Gritting my teeth, I give the movement she demonstrated a few more tries while she hovers nearby, providing pointers. I try to concentrate on the wave of my wrist, the tilt of my hips, but I can't seem to get it right, and I grow more frustrated with every minute. Without warning, Ren moves in close, her fingers curl round my arm to pull it into position. And the intimacy of her touch, her nearness, flusters me, and I drop the fan.
Focus, she snaps.
I clench my jaw.
I am.
No, you're not. I shrug her away from me. Well, maybe I don't want to perform well. Maybe I don't want any of this.
And you think I do?
Underneath her usual stern tone, there's something delicate, almost broken. Her chin lifts, rich brown eyes regarding me. None of us had a choice in this, but we do it for our families, because otherwise the king will... She stops abruptly. The end of her sentence hangs in the air between us. I recall General Yu's threat. Maybe it wasn't just me that received one. Maybe the coins and riches showered on Paper Girl's families are less a reward and more a reminder that the king has bought their daughter's obedience. And if they break it... All right, I sigh, picking up the fan. Let's try again. Half an hour and many dropped fan incidents later, Ren and I head back to Paper House. From outside Mistress Iara's suite comes the chatter of the girls, the muffled footsteps of maids. Delicious food smells waft out, making my stomach growl. But when Ren moves to head straight in, I hold out a hand to stop her. Thank you, I say, for helping me. You were right, I haven't really been trying. I puff out air, rubbing the back of my neck. I guess it felt like I'd been letting my family down or something. Like I was happy to be here. Her eyes move away. I don't think any of us are truly happy to be here. Excuse me? Have you met Blue? Right, she replies with a lift of her brows. Because she's so happy all the time. I blink, and Ren opens a door, something closing back over her expression. Following her inside, I send a quick bow in Mistress Iara's direction before kneeling down beside Aoki. Thank the gods there's food left, I murmur, picking up my chopsticks. I'm starving. She doesn't look up. Her face is frozen, eyes locked on something small in her hands. And when I peer round to see what it is, my own expression freezes. Red calligraphy, a scarlet summons. Aokiji. I swallow. Slowly, I set my chopsticks down. Are you all right? I ask in a whisper. She gives a jerk of her head that I take to be a nod. Jin's voice pipes up from across the table. You must be excited, Aoki. A sincere smile lifts her cheeks. Still staring down at her hands, Aoki gives another stiff nod. I notice that her fingers are trembling. Underneath the table, I press my thigh to hers. There's a harsh laugh. Looks like our little Aoki is finally about to become a woman, Blue purrs. And at only 16. She looks round the table, purposefully avoiding my eyes. That's all of us now, isn't it? You're forgetting Lei, Mariko sniggers. Blue's dark irises flick my way. Oh, yes. I forgot all about her. My fingers knot, but before I can say anything, Mistress Iara stands up. I wasn't called by the king for 2 whole months after our ceremony, she announces smoothly, giving me a smile across the table. That makes Blue's and Mariko's smirks drop. With some girls, Mistress Iara continues, he enjoys the wait. She steps over, holding out a hand. Come, Aoki, I'll help you get ready. Aoki winces. With a jagged breath, she looks at me. A white tinge to her lips where she sucks them in. It's what I wanted, she breathes as she gets to her feet, a whisper that only the two of us hear, and I'm not entirely sure which one of us she's trying to convince. That night, as I stay up waiting for Aoki to get back, I write home. Dear Baba, it's been over a month since my first letter. And I still haven't heard from you. I'm hoping this is because the shop is so busy now, and you've become such a celebrity in Cienzo that you don't have time for your daughter anymore. Remember her? Or maybe Tian's just been working you too hard. More likely. Whatever it is, please write soon. I miss you. Palace life is highly overrated. There are hours of preparation before you can even leave your room, and there are rules for everything. Tian would love it. Also, the food is awful. All right, not really. But I'd still trade it all for one of your pork dumplings any day. All my love, Lei. My brush hovers over the paper, wanting to add more, but Mistress Iara made it clear that I wasn't to give out any details about the palace or my life here. And anyway, I wouldn't want my father and Tian to know how difficult I'm finding things. I set the brush down, waiting until the ink dries before touching my fingers to it. As I trace each character, I imagine Baba's and Tian's hands doing the same in a few days. I bring the paper to my lips for a kiss. Then I roll the letter up, fastening it with a ribbon. At this hour, the only light comes from the lantern in the corner of my room. Pattering rainfall fills the midnight hush. I sit back on my sleeping mat, pulling my legs to my chest. This is the third letter I've written to home, and I still haven't heard anything back. I probably shouldn't read too much into it. There are so many explanations as to why they haven't responded yet. But I can't help it. Maybe Madame Himura found out about the letters and stopped them from being sent as a punishment for my embarrassing her at the unveiling ceremony. Guilt rings my belly as I remember Ren's warning earlier today. Maybe if I was performing better in my classes. The sound of movement in the hallway snaps off the thought. I get up, tucking my hair behind my ears, and move to the door. A figure passes, footsteps light. Aoki's back. Clutching the silk of my night robe tighter around me, I glide the door open. The air is fresh from the rain, the floorboards cool beneath my bare soles. Aoki? I call softly after the retreating figure, but she doesn't stop. I hurry after her. She turns the corner, disappearing through a door that leads to the gardens at the back of the house. I hesitate. We're not supposed to leave our rooms at night, let alone go outside. And if Aoki wanted me to go with her, wouldn't she have left the door open? Unsure now, I slide the door ajar. Rain-cooled air greets me. Beyond the house are gardens, graduating from manicured lawns and flower beds to a dense pine forest in the distance, moonlight silvering the treetops. I spot Aoki's retreating figure just before she's swallowed up by the dark line of the forest. Only it isn't Aoki. It's Ren. Under the moonlight, her outline is unmistakable, long-limbed and broad-shouldered, with that slinking, feline prowl. I stare at the spot where she disappeared between the trees, battling the urge to charge after her. Because while being caught wandering the house at night might earn us a slap and a lecture from Madame Himura, actually leaving the house to go gods know where, and with gods know who, will certainly have more serious consequences. My lips press tight. And after her telling me to be careful, I tiptoe back to my room. Sleep doesn't come for a long time. I keep picturing Ren moving through the forest, winding her way easily through the pines, smiling as she spots the person she snuck out even in the rain to meet. In my head, it's a tall, shadowy man. He opens his arms, and she wraps herself around him, dissolving into his touch. And in the pit of my belly, something dark stirs. 13. I don't get a chance to speak to Aoki until the following morning. She comes to my side as we head down the raised walkways to the lake in the south of Women's Court, where our Qi arts teacher, Master Takoa, holds his classes. It's a beautiful midsummer morning, bright and crisp, drops of rain from last night's shower nestling in the cupped palms of leaves, and the wooden buildings still stained dark. Yet the daylight shows how tired Aoki looks. Her eyes are puffy, her lips chapped, Before I can say anything, Blue looks round.
Little Aoki, she says, striding over. How are you feeling after your special night?
Her grin is all teeth.
I'm surprised you're even able to walk.
She goes on with a glance at Mariko.
I thought the king would have broken you.
Mariko titters, but the other girls are quiet. Oh, go away, Blue, I snap, threading my fingers through Aoki's. Blue arches a brow.
Don't you want to hear the saucy details, Nine? I'm surprised. I thought, since you still haven't had any sauciness yourself.
Well, you thought wrong. Nothing new there, I add, and I notice Ren at the back of the group, her lips quirking. Blue ignores me.
Come on, Aoki. Give us the details.
Yes, tell us, Mariko chimes in. Was he gentle with you, or did he want it rough? Aoki's cheeks grow splotchy, her freckles disappearing under the pink.
It's private, she stammers.
She tucks her chin, a lock of auburn hair falling across her face.
Private?
Blue regards her through squinted eyes.
Don't you remember what Mistress Iara told us? There's no such thing as private when it comes to being a paper girl.
And though I could be imagining it, I detect a note of bitterness in her voice. Ignore them, and tug on Aoki's hand. Let's get out of here. My eyes meet Ren's. Before I can question what I'm doing, I march past the other girls toward her, pulling Aoki with me. Could you send Master Tekoa our apologies for missing his lesson? I ask her in a low voice. Say there's been a female emergency. Though Ren's eyebrows knit just a fraction, she gives a curt nod. Sure. Thank you, I say. She shrugs. It's nothing, she says, even though it's not. If Master Tekoa decides to inquire about her absence, he'll know Ren lied to him. She'd be punished along with Aoki and me. But I'm counting on the fact that the notion of a female emergency will be too embarrassing for him to press further. Master Tekoa is our only male teacher. The king gives him special permission to come into women's court because Madame Himura insists, claiming he's the best chi arts practitioner in the whole palace. The rest of the girls are still watching us, most looking apprehensive. Chenna and the twins get on well with Aoki, and unlike me, they must know what she's going through. All the girls were sullen the day after their first night with the king, even Mariko and Blue, though I'm sure they wouldn't admit it now. With a pointed look in Blue's direction, as though defying her to intervene, Chenna comes over to us. I cried all night after the first time, she says, bending to clasp Aoki's shoulders. Aoki blinks, looking up with a sniff. Really? Chenna nods. It wasn't easy for me either. Over her head, Ren turns to me. It's all right, Lei, she says. Go. As her eyes meet mine, a spark of heat stirs in my chest. It takes me a moment to realize it's the first time she's spoken my name. My single syllable is surprisingly soft on her tongue, light, like a drop of rain. I think of her in the gardens last night, lit by moonlight. What she might have left Paper House for. Not just what. Who? And more, why do I care so much? I break her gaze and mutter a thanks, quickly leading Aoki away. The two of us find a secluded veranda at the back of a nearby tea house to wait out the lesson. It overlooks a rock garden, an old gardener in a wide-brimmed straw hat, sweeping the stones with a rake. She doesn't look up as we kneel side by side on the edge of the porch, and the rhythm of her rake is comforting, a steady scrape that plays under the soundtrack of the tea house, the chirp of birds in nearby trees.
You don't need to tell me about it, I say into Aoki's silence. She's still avoiding my gaze, staring down where she's playing with the sash at her waist. I just thought you could use some time away from the others. She nods. Tears spring to her eyes. She swipes them away with her sleeve and mumbles thickly. It's stupid. It had to happen at some point. And it's not like I didn't want it to. I did. I mean, he's the king. But,
her voice wavers.
I never guessed it would feel like this.
I lace my arm around her shoulder. It was your first time, Aoki. It was bound to affect you. I guess that's why we're meant to wait until marriage, I say, trying to sound like I knew what I'm talking about. So we are sure of the other person. So we're sure of ourselves. Aoki sniffs. I overheard one of my older sisters talking about it with her friend once. My parents were arranging for her to marry this boy from the neighboring village, and she met with him in secret one night before the deal was final. She tucks her hair behind one ear and shoots me a wobbly smile. They did things. Not everything, but enough that I knew she'd be in serious trouble if my parents found out. But she told my parents the next day that she was happy to marry him.
Her smile disappears.
It must have been a good night, she adds, muted. Then, even quieter, I was so scared. I gather her to me, something hot flaring to life in my chest. How dare he scare her? Even though I haven't seen him since the unveiling ceremony, I can still picture the king's handsome face clearly. I imagine punching it. Rubbing her nose with one hand, Aoki looks up at me from under tear-wet lashes.
Are you scared? For when it's your turn?
Something in the tone of her voice sends a prickle down my spine.
Should I be?
Aoki turns to the garden with unfocused eyes.
There was this boy in my village, she starts.
June.
He worked on the paddy fields too. We didn't talk much, but every time I saw him, any time I was near him, my whole body got all hot, and I'd be so nervous I could never think of what to say. He'd be smiling, and I'd just be blushing like an idiot. Each look he gave me was like sunlight sweeping over me.
Her voice falters, and tears trace wet paths down her cheeks. Still twisting the sash in her fingers, she murmurs,
I thought it would be like that with the king.
Maybe you'll feel that way next time. I try, swiping her tears away with my fingertips and giving her a small smile.
Maybe with some people it just takes time.
Maybe, she agrees. But I can tell she doesn't believe it. For the rest of the day, Aoki is sullen. I didn't realize how much I depended on her happy chatter, for her bubbly mood to lift my own. I try to cheer her up, whispering jokes when our teachers' backs are turned, and stealing her sugared hopia pastries filled with peanut paste, one of her favorite sweets. But she says she isn't hungry. This, coming from a girl who can usually eat 10 of those in one sitting and still have room for more. As if mirroring Aoki's mood, the weather turns over the course of the day. Heavy clouds roll in, so low I could jump up and touch them. We rush back from our last lesson, making it to Paper House, just as it starts to pour. I bump into Chenna on my way to the toilet. She gives me a nod as she passes, but I touch her shoulder to stop her.
Thank you, I say, for earlier.
She gives me her usual half-smile. It's all right. I have a little cousin back home. Aoki really reminds me of her. I know she's 16, but she seems so much younger sometimes. I nod. If only Blue and Mariko could leave her alone.
Like they do the rest of us?
Chenna's face is straight, so it takes me a moment to catch her joke. I let out a laugh.
You're right. I shouldn't hold my breath.
Anyway, she says, Mariko's actually pretty nice when she's not around Blue. And I wouldn't care too much what Blue says.
She looks like she's about to say something more, so I lean forward, brow furrowing.
What is it?
I press.
Well, I don't really like to talk about other people's business, but seeing as it's Blue,
she wets her lips. Do you know who her father is? I shake my head.
Someone important at court, right?
Not just someone important, Chenna replies. He's the king's only paper caste advisor. Even the Hanos aren't involved with the king's council. Everyone knows the king is paranoid when it comes to dealing with the clans. Probably worried he'll upset them one day and they'll turn on him. But Blue's father was exiled from his clan years ago.
Why?
I ask. Chenna shrugs. There are lots of different rumors, but whatever it was, he ended up here, and because he's a free agent, the king seems to trust him more than most.
What's this got to do with Blue?
Everyone knows her father is after a promotion. The king's first advisor died earlier this year, and he still hasn't appointed a successor.
Chenna's coal-black irises don't leave mine. Blue is 18. She could have been entered into the paper girl selection many times before now. So her father putting her forward for the first time this year seems rather convenient, don't you think?
I frown.
But the selection process
is not mandatory for daughters of court officials, she nods. Not that there are many paper caste court officials anyway, of course. But for the few who are, they're granted an exception, unless the family wants them to be considered and enters them voluntarily, I finish.
What's more, Chenna goes on, I heard some of the maids talking about how it was common knowledge Blue didn't want to be put forward as a paper girl.
Silence unfolds at this. Out of all the girls, Blue is the one I would have bet on for fighting tooth and nail to be selected. I imagined her following the selection of the paper girls since she was young, playing dress-up with her maids, pretending she was one of the chosen.
Her father used her,
I state, hollow.
It's exactly what Blue would have done herself,
Chenna replies with a lift of a shoulder. The coolness in her voice makes me wince. Tien had told me how paper caste families offer up their daughters in the hopes of gaining favor with the court. But hearing Chenna talk so frankly about it, being traded against your will by your own father can't feel nice, even for someone like Blue.
Chenna, I say as she moves away, how do you know all this?
Something flickers in her dark eyes.
The king talks a lot, she answers, and there's an edge to her voice, especially after a few glasses of sake.
It's not until I'm coming back from the toilet that I comprehend the significance of Chenna's words. Maybe the one person who can tell me what happened to my mother is the last person I'd ever want to ask. At dinner, Madame Himura tells us we'll be attending a dance performance later that evening.
The king will be in attendance, she says, her yellow eyes cut to me. So no mistakes.
An excited thrum runs through the room. Jen and Jin lean their heads in, whispering, and Blue and Mariko swap knowing looks. It's the first time we'll be crossing paths with the king in public. And while some of the girls seem happy by this news, a coldness slivers over me at the mention of him. I glance across the table in Aoki's direction. She doesn't make any sign that she's heard, still poking her food with her chopsticks, head propped on one hand. When we get up to leave, I notice Blue hanging back. I hover in the doorway, pretending to be adjusting my shoes. As Madame Himura rises from the table, Blue approaches her in a purposeful stride.
What is it?